Can we add a disclaimer before the podcast that I am not Galen?
I know so many people on Twitter are really confused.
Welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast, Emergency Podcast, Friday afternoon, Robert Mueller Indictment Edition. We're recording this at around 2 p.m. Eastern, and a little over an hour ago, we got the latest development in the special counsel investigation headed up by Robert Mueller. The latest is an indictment against 13 Russian individuals and three businesses, troll farms, essentially alleging that they worked to interfere with the 2016 elections. It's a bit of a reminder that for all the questions about Trump's behavior and collusion, that the initial goal of the Mueller investigation is to investigate Russian meddling in the 2016 election. And these are the first charges that go right at that. So here to talk about it and discuss about what we learned, what we didn't learn, the chaos and confusion that was 2016 and continues is our usual crew, Nate Silver. Hello, Nate.
Happy Friday, everyone. Happy News Day. All the news happens on Fridays.
Politics reporter Claire Malone. Hello, Claire.
Hey, Jody.
And politics editor Micah Cohen. Hello, Micah.
Not only does the news always happen on Friday, but people in the office know I've been going to the dentist more often than I should, and probably the past four appointments, every single time I've had to cancel because of huge Trump administration news.
But Micah's gums are bleeding all
over
the
mouth,
table.
People.
See, my argument would be that almost any day that you schedule a dentist appointment, there's going to be huge Trump administration
news
that would cause a politics editor to have to cancel his appointment.
I'm talking the four biggest stories of the past 6 months.
Whenever we have live podcasts, there's always gigantic news.
It was the Manafort indictment. Uh-huh. It was today. It was, I think, the travel ban.
Your teeth have a spidey sense.
I made it back to the dentist. Yeah.
Well, listeners, we have more fascinating things to discuss.
One more thing about my teeth.
Nate, so look, we're all processing this. I think we'll say that there is a lot we don't know from this. We're all kind of reading as we go. But Nate, what that is actually in this indictment as you've been reading it jumps out at you?
I guess there's information on the scale of the operation that I think was missing before. So this organization, what's it called? It's called like the
Internet Research Agency, LLC.
Internet Research Agency, LLC, a.k.a. Media Synthes, LLC.
It has some aliases.
Mm-hmm. There's like eight AKAs. Mm-hmm.
But so they're talking about an operation that has, I think they described a couple of hundred people, mm-hmm. and which has a budget that was about $1.25 million per month. You know, the headcount is more impressive than the budget, I guess, in the sense that I guess people in Russia are pretty cheap to employ. But, you know, if you have 300 people or thereabouts kind of working to, often in very clumsy ways, but kind of infiltrate and troll and seed discord and chaos in the U.S. election, that's a bigger scale than, for example, the previous disclosures about ad buys on Facebook, mm-hmm. which amounted to, I think, like only $1 million total, which is not really a needle mover. But if you have like 300 people, again, that's a more serious operation than not necessarily people would have predicted, but certainly that had been confirmed before.
Claire?
What stood out to me was certainly what Nate said is the scale of the operation. I was sort of looking for the connections to the Trump campaign. And basically what we have in this indictment is that these people from the Internet Research Agency did contact Trump campaign officials, but in this indictment, there's no word here that they ever responded to these people who are reaching out. Certainly, grassroots activists associated with the Trump campaign responded to these false identities created by this agency, and so that's interesting. You know, it's more of like the nitty gritty and filling in the blanks of what this looked like. But as far as whether or not, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about this again in this podcast, but the collusion thing is what I didn't see anything clearly outlined here that said collusion.
Well, this is a nice reminder, this document, that there's two, maybe more than two tracks in the Mueller investigation. But one is this question of meddling, and then there's the question of the ties to the Trump campaign.
Right.
But it is this really feels like it sort of is a reminder that the goal of Russian interference was just so chaos. It wasn't necessarily get Hillary not elected or get Trump elected or whatever. There's just a lot of evidence here that it was just cause chaos and confusion, Mike. And I mean, I think the scale of that is kind of one of the more impressive things here, or one of the more kind of stunning things here.
Yeah, the indictment says the stated goal was to not only sow chaos, but distrust in American institutions and elections, which I think was successful. And I think we've seen Claire's written about this. But the eroding trust, I think, is in a really important part of this. And you can see kind of how that jibes with maybe Russian goals nationally, right? I do think kind of clause 1A of that goal is, it seems pretty clear, to help Trump and hurt Clinton.
So there is some in here that says, you know, yeah, hurting Clinton maybe even a higher goal. You know, I don't know if we want to go about ranking them, but it's like anti-Clinton, pro-chaos, and then, you know, as a result of that, pro-Trump.
The seeds of this have always sort of been that Putin sort of personally disliked Clinton.
Yeah.
And that was...
And thought she would win
and was basically trying to, I believe, please correct me if I'm wrong, that some of what's contained in this indictment talks about suppressing minority turnout, things like that, just to kind of like ding what might be typically Democratic constituencies.
So. Yeah, there's one of the political advertisements was titled Hillary Clinton Doesn't Deserve the Black Vote.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So they were trying to.
Do you want to? You're holding the indictment in front of us. In front of you, you were the only one of us that printed out 37 pages. That's the sound of actual paper. No, but you want to read some of those other things that are in there.
But
these are the ads that were run.
You're better at reading stuff.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I say no to Hillary Clinton. I say no to manipulation. Join our hashtag Hillary Clinton for Prison 2016.
Just, I'm getting a little note over the transom here from Galen, who says in the indictment they clearly say that they are supporting Sanders and Trump once they get to 2016, and that prior to 2016 it seems to be more just sort of, it's not clear who they're supporting. It's sort of just the disarray factor.
Yeah, they're supporting, and they're also anti-Ted Cruz and anti-Rubio.
Yeah,
but they're explicitly pro-Trump, and it says don't criticize Trump or Bernie because they're the people that we're trying to help.
They're the more destabilizing candidates, not coincidentally. Here's October 19th, 2016. Quote, Hillary is a Satan and her crimes and lies had proved just how evil she is.
Is a Satan.
One of many.
Again, no copy desk here at RussianTrollFarms.com. You know, should be is Satan, not is a Satan.
That's right.
Thank you for that clarification.
Or satanic.
I think there's some stuff we want to talk about that's maybe not in here, but to just ask the sort of broader question first, and then we'll go back into the actual indictment here. How will this change public opinion regarding the Russian investigation and, you know, the questions around both Russian meddling and Trump's ties to Russia?
I don't know. It's a little hard to predict how much staying power that these stories have. I mean, certainly when I was looking today, it was being treated as breaking news on the various networks. I interrupted my schedule of watching curling.
Mm-hmm.
To watch a little bit of CNN and Fox News. And
it's good to be buff.
We're working away.
You know, we cover sports.
I was
we cover sports
too.
To site, so it was actually for work.
Uh-huh.
We're starting a curling podcast next week. Look, I think it adds some tangible substance to this investigation, which had kind of gotten caught up. I mean, you know, as you said earlier, Mueller's scope is fairly broad. It includes kind of Russian interference. It includes collusion, and it includes obstruction of justice, right? You know, I think the more kind of actual evidence of Russian interference you have in that broth, that makes it a more potent soup. The ultimate protein would come from collusion, though.
I do still think that it's going to be really hard to prove collusion.
Yeah, so I'm going to frame things a little more boldly than Nate. This fleshes out the story of Russian interference really well. We know the names of the advertisements they were using. We know their budget. We know the names of the companies. We know the departments they had. So in my mind, this will go a long ways towards cementing the fact and the form of Russian interference in 2016, right? The big question then is, how does the American public disentangle Russian interference versus collusion versus effect, and then breaking down collusion, is it unwitting collusion, which I don't know if that's an oxymoron, or witting collusion?
Yeah,
and here it's all unwitting, right?
And I think that question of collusion or not will become a very partisan thing. So already you've seen sort of Democrats or, like, you know, people who are on the far left will say Russia was interfering with our elections. And that there's like an immediate jump to, and the Trump campaign was benefiting from it. Therefore, people in the Trump campaign should be indicted. Well, legally, they're only going to be able to be indicted if there's proof that they knowingly... Now, I'm not a lawyer. But it's like proof, proof that they basically like...
Broke the law.
And then I think you could see, like, if you're...
You're a lawyer?
Maybe once this comes into the bloodstream of the political landscape, then Republicans, you could see a partisan split where Republicans say, okay, the Russians are bad guys and they tried to screw with our elections, but listen, the Trump team didn't know what was going on. It's almost like a stupidity plea, right?
So,
or you know, maybe there's going to be no evidence that the Trump campaign officials ever responded to this stuff. I mean, this is taking away for a second the Trump Tower meeting.
Yes.
But I think that's...
But I guess that's part of what I'm thinking. Is there any weird way in which this, like, shifts focus and potentially provides some sort of, you know, twisted cover for Trump? Because it's now like, well, the Russians who were up to all
of this. As the rest of you have been talking, I have been
not listening.
I've been doing research for this segment, going through real Donald Trump's tweets and trying to see to what extent is he saying that there's no collusion versus is he saying that Russia's a phony excuse. Right?
It's a little
muddled. It's a lot of it's collusion, but there is, for example, the somewhat infamous tweet, Russia must be laughing up their sleeves. Watching as the U.S. tears itself apart over a Democrat excuse for losing the election. Excuse was in all caps, so that's why I raised my voice. So there is this kind of ambiguity. I guess it's easier now for them to like pick a defense strategy and say, hey, Bob Mueller said, and I'm sure it's what they'll say. I'm sure they'll start saying that Bob Mueller now said that it was unwitting, right? He basically proved that there's no collusion. Of course, obviously, the way people think Mueller works is maybe this is the amuse-bouche. I'm just trying to use as many cliches.
Here's the thing.
Yes.
Here's the thing. Trump, I think earlier on, if my memory serves correctly, used to hit the there was no interference note much more often than he has recently. He's kind of switched to no collusion.
Can I read this?
Yeah.
So, because this is important to separate, that Trump has made statements both about saying I have not colluded with Russia, but he has also denied that there was any Russian meddling. Perhaps that has shifted over time, but on the 26th of February 2017, there's a tweet that a lot of people are flagging now that Nate did not find in his quick research, where Trump says Russia talk is fake news put out by the Dems and played up by the media in order to mask the big election defeat and illegal leaks, which seems to be him saying.
But that's February 2017. So Micah's point, I think, is right, which is as I'm scrolling through these, there's a shift. I don't know if it's a subtle shift, but from like kind of no interference to no collusion.
Exactly.
And so you see a higher population of the no collusion message later on.
But here's what's interesting to me. Okay, so most people already think that Russia interfered in the 2016 election, right? I'm looking at some poll here, and in January 2018, 68% of people thought they tried, 27% of people do not think they tried, right? So a healthy majority already think they tried. What's interesting to me is, do these details and does this story of interference that is now so fleshed out take this interference, which has really kind of been bubbling in the background of the political conversation, and move it to the foreground? And does that change the way that voters process all this? In other words, part of what I wonder is, even if there's no collusion, right, does the very fact that Russia interfered to help Trump end up having a bigger effect on his standing than it has once the story is fleshed out?
I think that's a good point. I think that for Americans and for public opinion and for, let's say, Democrats who are looking to win Congress back and potentially to impeach Trump, which is sort of like a stated ultimate goal of many Democrats, then the interference of Russia in the election is the right public message to give. But when it comes to the actual legal facts of these things, you are much more likely to impeach Trump on the grounds of obstruction of justice, I think. And I think that like it's a weird, like you have to keep them next to each other on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Like
That's
you right. have to, you have to promote the message of Russian interference while knowing in the background that like legally, eventually it would probably be like impeachment via obstruction of justice.
Well, and that's the thing. And look, if you're a Democrat listening to this and you want Trump out of office, the process that will get him out of office is going to be a political one, right? whether it's impeachment or the 25th Amendment, it's going to involve politics, right? And so the more that Russian – because we think an obstruction of justice finding is much more likely than collusion, the more that Russian interference is an accepted fact in the public's eye and taken seriously by the public, I think the more weight they might put on an obstruction finding. Does
right.
that make
it's like,
sense?
To extend your car metaphor.
Was there a car metaphor?
No.
Obstruction and collusion, you're like driving down the road together, right?
Oh, mine. Okay.
Obstruction and collusion are the gas. This is the oil. You need some oil, too.
Right.
If you're out of oil, if you don't change the oil, then the car stops functioning.
What's
right?
the oil?
Actual Russian interference.
Oh, okay.
In part because it's Gazprom.
In part because that's like
that is supplying.
But that's also like kind of Mueller's ostensible entry point into this
yes.
whole
right.
investigation, right? So, and so, like, kind of, you know, if you're one of those people, like Mueller's being super technical. Let's diagnose Mueller's. You know, like this is be like you had to change the oil. You have to make sure that we have like we're moving in some direction, and that direction is ultimately tied to the fact that Russia interfered in the election.
Well, and the other thing you're hearing from critics of Mueller is also he's too focused on Trump. He's looking into these ties. He's supposed to be looking into Russia. And so this is a reminder that he is doing that as well. There's a lot we could talk about. I want to sort of frame two things and then we have to wrap up. But getting back to what's actually in here and this description of the sort of chaos that was sowed and the Russian interference and the efforts mostly on social media, Micah, there's nothing in here that gets to the effect that these efforts had. You know, it's a compelling kind of
yeah.
description. How important of a puzzle piece is that to sort of try to understand the effect? I don't know whether it's Mueller's role or not. And then how do we even go about measuring that?
So this is a really interesting question. I was sort of surprised, actually. Claire and I were watching the deputy AG give a press conference. And the first question from the press was about the effect. And the FBI's line all along has been,
it's not our job.
It's not our job to judge.
And I think they're right.
No, I think that's, yeah. I think it's right, too. How important is it? I don't really know. The thing is like, it's an impossible question to answer. Yeah. I've actually tried to get Nate to try to tackle this question several times, but I think Nate has resisted because it's basically because this information and these activities were happening over a very long time span, you sort of can't disentangle, right?
Yeah, because it's like the kind of definition of drip, 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 and, you know, I mean, again, if the scope is larger, so by the way, one reason why I say that is because one can point toward other things that are easier to measure and we know did matter, i.e. the Comey letter, mm-hmm. for example. But, you know, if you have this kind of constant drip, 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 where you have 300 people who are working to kind of throw the media narrative in a certain direction, and the media narrative about Clinton kind of did go in that direction. Lots of voters thought for lots of reasons that she was basically a crook and crooked. You know, lots of Bernie supporters thought that too, certainly at the most peaked stage of the primary process as well. And so at the very least, like, it's in the same direction as the problems that undermined Clinton's campaign. I mean, people forget that, like, the reason why Donald Trump became president is because Hillary Clinton was really unpopular, right? Mm-hmm. Donald Trump was also really unpopular, had the Electoral College helping him, had news events, obviously the Comey letter. But Hillary Clinton was deeply and profoundly unpopular. And people kind of take that for granted a little bit. Like, it's obvious that, like, she's a bad politician and, like, did all these speeches, which were stupid, by the way, you know, had her email server, which was stupid, by the way, right? Didn't go to Wisconsin. But, like, but people, I think, take that a little bit too much for granted and don't examine. Because if Hillary Clinton has, like, a 45% favorability rating instead of 41, she wins the election by quite a big margin, actually, you know? So did this kind of contribute to an environment where there was an alignment of things that voters were hearing, frankly, from the media about Clinton and from her Republican opponents, and at certain stages of the primary process from her Democratic opponents too. And when that message you hear so consistently, and this is like adding fuel to that, then it's interesting.
I wonder if Sanders is going to have a response to this.
It'd be very interesting.
Because this sort of specifically says that these Russian trolls were, you know,
yeah,
advocating for him in some ways. They're not attacking him, whatever we want to, however we want to delineate it.
The other thing is the election was so close that, like, it's probably pretty safe to say this: the Russian campaign swung the election, right?
Maybe.
Right. But I mean, it's the reason you tried to assign this piece to me. You know, you kind of want to have your head around
how
much.
It's not safe to say it.
Right.
Right.
It's not crazy.
It's not safe to say it, but it's, yeah, it's, you know, not crazy to say that it didn't.
That's where we like to, that's okay. The ground we like to find between
but
safe and
crazy.
But she
lost Wisconsin by 0.8 of a point, which is tipping point state, right? You know, the on average, maybe the magnitude of this is like, if you're like, have a probability distribution.
Half a point.
Maybe, no, maybe more than that, right? I'm saying, but it's a wide distribution. I can imagine cases where this was totally just a drop in the bucket, had almost no effect, and I can imagine cases where it was quite profound. I mean, it is interesting that, like, some of the more substantive allegations in this indictment is about efforts to suppress the African-American vote,
yeah,
using Facebook ads and stuff. You know, I can imagine a study around that question, right? Maybe you have mm-hmm. some way to determine how much different groups of voters were served certain ads, and was black turnout especially low in swing states or in precincts or in counties where there were more of these ads served. Like, that's a good thesis idea for some aspiring PhD student out there.
All right, pitch Nate and pitch Micah.
But that returns to your original question, I think. Because it's so hard to measure, and because the election was so close that a million things could have swung it, I think it sort of lowers the stakes of what effect it had.
One last thing I'd love to get your thoughts on, and then I think we will continue, obviously, to talk about this on Monday and beyond. But looking forward to this fall's election, Claire, there were hearings last week where our intelligence agencies all said that there is evidence that they are convinced that Russia plans to interfere in the 2018 elections. Does this change the pressure on that? The Trump administration has not kind of ordered any efforts to prevent that. Do you think that's going to become a big storyline for the fall?
It's state efforts, so states would have to take measures to protect mm-hmm. their voting procedures. Sure, I think it's going to be a thing. We'll see how much, I guess, action is actually put behind it, but I think it's definitely a percolating concern for
And I mean, from a sort of public, is the public going to sort of rally? Does anyone see the public rallying around this sort of saying, we have to get our act together for the fall?
I mean, election administration has long been a hot button issue with the voting public. So I'd imagine rallies and protests. Yeah, there should be. But
it's just you're going to see. I feel like it's going to be stories in the local news about, you know, are Russian trolls like trying to sway your school board election or something mm-hmm. like that. Like, I'm sure that will become. Oh, yeah. Become a thing.
I mean, it does make it hard for Trump to dismiss the investigation out of hand, right? Now there's something tangible. I mean, this is an important, even if it had nothing to do with Trump, and there's no claim that Trump knowingly participated in this indictment, right? You know, this rises to the level of significantly a newsworthy event and kind of justifies Mueller's investigation and also indicates that, like, the Department of Justice is not screwing around, right? I'm not sure that's something that Trump wanted. And so, you know, if he later on were to go back to him where he tried to fire Mueller or Rosenstein, then that would be problematic.
No, this is what I said before, and it's sort of my main takeaway is, as you said, Jody, earlier, the investigation was started in large part to look into Russian meddling. So the firmer that is established, it's like, you know, what are those?
We already got the gas oil metaphor. No, I don't think we need another one.
What are the punching things that are heavy at the bottom until they pop back up? You know, the more established that foundation is, the harder it will be for Trump and his supporters to parry around
dispersions on Mueller's investigation.
On Mueller or obstruction or any other thing that comes out of the investigation.
He's got poipus.
Claire, I'll just add, Claire, one thing you just mentioned just made me think that, I mean, obviously our discourse is going to continue to get more and more annoying, but like, I think we're going to see more and more just like dismissing people as bots and trolls online. And like, if someone says something that you disagree with, it'll be like, oh, you're a bot. You know,
Micah Cohen's a total bot.
I mean, that sounds like a very bot question.
Ew, he's such a bot.
Yeah, exactly. No, but can you imagine how annoying it's going to be over the next few months
fake
when
news,
we now all of a sudden, which
bots,
is, yeah,
bots
the whole
fake
news
fake
bots
news.
Thing is just going to get worse and worse, and it's no fun. Okay. This was fun and interesting and illuminating, and we will continue to have these conversations.
Got to finish reading the indictment.
Okay, we know what paper sounds like. Come on. Nate Silver, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was a very bot-like answer. Clem Malone, thanks to you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jody.
And Micah Cohen, thanks to you.
Thanks.
My name is Jody Avergan. Our producers, Galen Druk and Tony Chow, is in the control room. Thanks to the two of them for scrambling on this emergency podcast. Our next show is on Tuesday. Monday is a holiday. I will be out, but this crew will be here to continue to discuss this and lots more. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you soon.